DipYourCard.com. Guys, this is the most famous in the world for dipping your car. This is the most reputable company out there for removable, peelable automotive paint. Anybody can learn how to do this. You can go to youtube.com/dipyourcar and watch it right now. It's very simple. You can do your wheels. You can do your emblem. You can do the entire car. I don't care if you want matte, satin, high gloss finishes. They're all available. All the materials and the equipment needed is available in the kit. Step-by-step tutorial videos are available free on YouTube. You're probably already seeing Dip Your Car's product everywhere right now. It's on everything from teenagers' coupes to soccer moms' minivans to high-end exotic cars. This stuff is very cool, and you do it yourself. You order the kit. You go to DipYourCar.com. They send you everything you need to dip your car. You can have a new vehicle, new-looking vehicle with a brand-new color on it tomorrow. When you're tired of it and you want to go to a different color, or you want to go back to your original color, you just peel it off. It doesn't take any toxic, you don't need anything to remove this like say you would with fingernail or toenail paint. You just simply peel it off. It's a very cool thing. Check it out. DipYourCar.com.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
So the Super Bowl is over. Man, I loved it. I just love so many different things about it. I'm not the biggest football fan. You know, I'm on the side of things where if you take beer out of the game, you take the fans out as well. I refuse to believe that anybody truly finds football exciting. And my general argument is, look, you got guys wearing 25 pounds of Kevlar running around banging into each other. In an entire four-hour period, there are 7.5 minutes of action. So I just refuse to believe that people truly find that exciting. I think it's an alcohol-induced sport. But the game was really great, and there were so many hot spots, so much emotion both ways. Seattle has it right at the very end. They throw the controversial play. The Patriots intercept. You know, there was just a lot of moving parts. There, the halftime show, Katy Perry knocked it out of the park. But I can't help but think about all the times that we as Americans get fleeced. We get absolutely fleeced, and week after week, we fall for it again and again. Something comes up. Deflategate. Guys, who cares? Who possibly cares what the air pressure of a football is, man? That's the dumbest thing in the world. And if you say it helped his grip, then God bless his grip. Who gives a damn if it helped his grip? It's a freaking air in a football. I have no idea what the air pressure in my car tires are right now or what they're supposed to be. Or I don't know the air pressure of anything. Of the tennis balls in my closet, of a baseball, if a baseball even has air. I don't have the foggiest idea. And you try to make something of nothing. I mean, I remember back Malaysian Airlines. Malaysian Airlines goes down. Oh, my gosh. Every news channel found out that they could get ratings if they could somehow create the idea. Pure stipulation. Absolutely zero. Zero evidence. If they could speculate that that plane was hijacked. And here was a running theory. The pilot was in on it. But now you've got 218 passengers on board. So where are their bodies? Well, we killed them. Here's how. Pilot puts on an oxygen mask. He then takes the plane up so high that it depressurizes and everybody essentially suffocates. Now he did away with 218 people. He just needs to park the plane in a hangar somewhere, refueling it to later use it as a weapon. This was a believable and ongoing theory. Look, the plane went down in the Indian Ocean. It's a terrible and sad story, but that's still the story. That's what happened. I can remember back, not that long ago, 2013, when things started coming out where the American dollar was going to be devalued. The dollar would no longer be the currency. So go invest in gold. And gold went up. And what a bunch of crap. You think the United States military is going to let the dollar get overridden? Yup. If you read the news in 2013, you did. Go back 10 years. You guys remember the bird flu? Remember when people were building shelters and stockpiling water and food because of the bird flu? Really, guys? Is that how you want to live? Do you want to live in a bomb shelter on salvaged water? Listen, if there's going to be a nuclear attack, and I hope that there's not, but go ahead and drop the bomb right on old JLP's head. Because I'm not into living in the shelter on bottled water. I don't drink bottled water now. If it's not Coca-Cola, I'm not putting it in my system. And if you guys want to continue to get fleeced, go ahead. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much air was in that football. This is sports talk and it's crap. People do this with NASCAR. People try to make believe that NASCAR is real. Look, guys, reality check. Okay, for all of you Santa Claus believers out there, if you have a car and your buddy has a car and you go and race each other, whoever wins today is going to win tomorrow. One guy's got a faster car. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Yet in NASCAR, we allow the same 10 white privileged males to go race each other every Sunday in the same car doing the same thing. And not only do we expect a different result, we get one. That's insanity. But for those of you that want to believe that that's a real race, have at it. Enjoy Deflategate. Worry about the bird flu and get rid of all your dollars because the military's getting overridden. There's going to be a queue. Go buy in gold, except it's not. I'm Chael Sonnen, and stick around. Sean Waltman, you're welcome. Valentine's Day is next week. Her friends are going to ask her, so, what did he get you for Valentine's Day? Impress your woman and her friends. If you don't understand the importance of impressing her friends, then you haven't been in relationships for very long. Look, you'll be a hero when she posts all over social media that you came through for Valentine's Day. Here's the offer. 100 Bloom of Love with a free glass vase for just $19.99. Impress her even more by upgrading at gourmet chocolates and a stuffed bear for just $9.99 more. Go to proflowers.com and use my code SONNEN, S-O-N-N-E-N, and you're going to get a savings. Listen, ProFlowers is quick, it's easy, and they deliver on Valentine's Day. That is guaranteed, guys. Can't beat the price or the convenience. Get it done early before it's too late. ProFlowers makes it easy to check off the list. Even if you've already made plans for Valentine's Day, you still need to have flowers delivered. It's a must. Okay, take it from me. You must have the flowers delivered. I've already done this. I'm already prepared, but I want you to be too. Listen, when she says she doesn't need flowers, guys, she doesn't mean it. When she says she doesn't want flowers, what you had better be hearing is get me flowers. Pro Flowers has a guarantee that their product will last 7 days or they'll give you your money back. It's a no-brainer. The longer you wait, the harder it is to find roses at this price. You have to trust me. Chael Sonnen to you. You got to come up with flowers on February 14th. And some of you jabronis forgot that Valentine's Day was February 14th. So for that, you're welcome. Go to proflowers.com right now. Click on the blue microphone in the top right corner and type in sunnen, S-O-N-N-E-N. That's proflowers.com. Click on the microphone and insert the word sunnen for a savings. Order today. The deal expires Friday at midnight. You're welcome.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
I haven't been recording this podcast for too long, but I love doing it. And I know that you guys enjoy listening to it. The nomination process for the 10th annual People's Podcast Awards is taking place, and I need you to nominate my podcast so that I can be on the ballot. To do that, you just need to go to podcastawards.com, type "You're Welcome" with Chael Sonnen in the sports category, and then copy and paste my podcast URL. To get my URL, just click on "You're Welcome" with Chael Sonnen logo at podcastone.com and paste my landings page URL in the designated spot at podcastawards.com. Nominations in soon, so sign me up today. That's podcastawards.com and nominate "You're Welcome" with Chael Sonnen in the sports category. Thanks for all your support, and you're welcome.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, welcome back to Your Welcome. Chael Sonnen here, and as promised, I've got Sean Waltman on the phone, better known to me as X-Pac. Sean, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm just real happy. I was honestly, Chael, I was really surprised when I got the message that you wanted me to be on your show, so... honored to be on, man.
You know,
I thought
you were giving old Chael the blow off. I had to come back at you a second time. In fact, I think I even said to you, "Hey, man, are you blowing me off?"
Yeah, no. That's just like, if you knew me, you wouldn't be surprised. I'm really bad about checking my DMs and I'm the worst, man. That's why I have to have somebody represent me.
I tell you, I feel like I do know you. You know, that's the thing that's so amazing and powerful about the industry that you came from is that you guys are so good at connecting with the fans. But, you know, I almost need to start. I got to start you with this. I am a mark, and I know that's looked down on in the industry, but I am one, and I love being a mark.
I think it's great. I'm a mark, too, Chael.
I appreciate that, because I don't ever want to give that up. That's what still makes it fun for me. That's what allows me to suspend reality and get in arguments with my friends about what's happening or what should have happened. But on that vein of being a mark, to me, you're X-Pac, but... I know in real life you're Sean Waltman, but I don't want to call you Sean and somehow disrespect you or your character. So set me straight. What is PR wise, man? What should we refer to you as?
Well, here's the thing: if different people refer to me as different things. A lot of my close friends that have known me for a long time call me Kid because I was 1, 2, 3 Kid when I was a kid.
Sure.
And, you know, they still call me that to this day. And, you know, a lot of guys call me Pac. It doesn't really matter. You know, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
All right, cool. Matter. All right, man, I like it. Okay, well, let's get into things. Do you still follow, like, for example, did you watch Raw this week or the Rumble last week?
Yeah, I did.
Man, they got a problem on their hands. What in the hell are they doing? They promised us as fans, tune in, buy this pay-per-view. Whoever wins the Royal Rumble is going to the main event of Mania. I've got tickets to Mania. Now, I don't personally really care what they do. I get that. However, they did make a promise, and people paid their good money, and now it looks like they're having buyer's remorse.
You talking about the Royal Rumble stipulation?
Yeah, and I'm talking about...
kind of trying to walk it back?
They're trying to walk it back. You know, the crowd didn't respond the way anybody thought the crowd would respond. For some reason, Roman's not over. He's over with me. I think he's a handsome guy. He's a young guy. I get it. I think he can wrestle. His interviews need a little work, but I don't think they're as bad as people say.
Right. Here's the thing. I mean, first of all, they picked the worst town to try to pull that off in. Philadelphia is notorious, and that's where I am right now, by the way. It's a great town for wrestling, but, you know, you're not going to tell them what they're going to eat and what they're not going to eat, and especially here. And if they feel like somebody's the chosen one, they're going to spit that out for sure. So, I mean, they really did Roman a terrible disservice by doing that to him. You know, it's not his fault. You know, maybe people could say, okay, he could be better on his interviews or on his, you know, when he's got the mic or whatever. But, you know, like you said, that'll come. But it's like a real good piece of meat. You know, somebody could pick out the piece of meat and it's the best piece of meat in the world. But if you stick it on the grill that's too hot, it's going to get charred on the outside and it's still going to be raw on the inside.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what just happened with them. In my opinion.
Yeah, that's a great example. But once you've done it, all right, once you've cooked that meat and you've served it, it's very hard to take it back. You can't unfry that egg. What I'm saying is they served up Roman Reigns, and now they were attempting to unwind this play, and WrestleMania is in 2 months. I think they've got a problem on their hands. And you want to know what I think they do? You want to know, and again, I'm a mark, but you want to know what I think they do? Okay, so now... they're holding the match. They had Seth Rollins versus Daniel Bryan. Whoever wins that will take on Roman at a future pay-per-view. That winner goes on to WrestleMania, which was never part of the deal, but this is wrestling. I accept it. Sean, I think they're going to double down. I think they're going to double down and put Roman over again, no matter how much it infuriates people. But you know what? That's the right play. You don't pull Roman and stick in Daniel Bryan. Wrestling loves to say, hey, we give the fans whatever they want. Well, that's a bunch. Stop. An untalented person will have to give the fans whatever they want. Coca-Cola doesn't go and put more sugar in their product just because the kids want more sugar. Coca-Cola comes out and says, we're the experts in soda. This is the best recipe, and you're going to drink it. And guess what? They do.
Correct. You're right. And you know what? Vince McMahon would love to hear you say that. Because, I mean, that's how he thinks. But here's the only problem with that is when you exploit social media in the way that they're doing and, you know, talk about the interactive experience and, you know, pushing about, you know, the whole the trending this and the hashtag that, you've got to kind of take the, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to, you know, just be selective of when you want to, you know, when you want to give that merit or not. I mean, so that's kind of a problem there, sure. I mean, in my opinion.
But isn't that emotion
overall,
strong?
I mean, Vince is the boss. That's the thing. And I don't know if did you see this the Austin podcast last night at all?
I didn't hear it. I listen to his podcast every week, but I didn't hear it last night.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I play, you know, on podcast one. But the live, you know, Steve always asks a real. He grilled Vince, and he, you know, he did a really good job with Hunter too. Crap! Now I lost my train.
Did you lose your? Because I wanted to know what you're saying is that Austin did a podcast. I'm assuming he touched on the same thing. Who was his guest last night? Was it Hunter?
It was Hunter. Yeah.
Okay, so did he ask him flat out? Did he say, "Hey, what are you going to do here? You got a problem? You guys want to go with Roman, and the fans want you to go with Daniel?"
Yeah, but they talked about you know, the fact that it was debated, you know, on what to do, you know, at the Royal Rumble, and it all boils down to it's Vince McMahon's company, and he's still the boss.
Sure.
You know, no matter what people say, you know, Hunter this or Stephanie that, Vince McMahon is the final say so on that stuff still. So, I mean, it all comes down to him.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, let's run this back even further, though. For WrestleMania, I've never known what in the hell's going to happen. I don't know until the night of, and that's always important. That's part of the intrigue. That's why we have WrestleMania parties. Now, the word got out about 12 months ago, maybe not quite that long, but a good 8 months, that they were going to build up Roman Reigns, who no one even knew who he was 8 months ago. They were going to put him in a main event against Brock Lesnar at Mania, and they were going to have him take the belt off of Brock Lesnar. When that word gets out, you've got to change course. Per the rules of wrestling, you must change course, and for some reason, they did not.
I mean, unless Here's the thing. Unless it's like a Steve Austin situation back when people knew, pretty much everybody knew Steve was going to be the man and he was going to beat Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. But the thing was, is Steve was, you know, he was on, white hot fire. And there was no need to push him because he needed no push at all. He just needed to be given the ball and take off. So there's a little bit a difference in the two. So, sometimes being able to, to see what's going to happen ahead of time isn't a bad thing, but in this case, you're absolutely 100% correct.
All right, so what do you think's going to happen? Do you think they're going to give in and they're going to let Daniel Bryan go with this? No, I don't have anything against the guy. In fact, I like Daniel Bryan. However, if you're telling me that I'm supposed to buy down the road that he can beat Brock Lesnar clean, that's a tough sell, man. That's a really, really tough sell, and he's going to have to beat him. Brock's contract's up. We get that Brock's going down, and that's fine. But you're telling me that Daniel Bryan can beat him?
I would like to hope that Brock would stick around, even though his contract's up. I think that the company is going to do their best to try to keep him. And I mean, as far as like the schedule goes, I think Brock's schedule is fantastic. I think he can't complain about that at all. So, I would, if he stays, if they can get him locked down before Mania, I'd leave that thing on him.
Wow.
That's just me at this point with everything going on and, all the speculation and everything. I would definitely keep that in mind right now.
Well, I think you should. I warned you five minutes ago. I fought for this stuff.
He's just Brock Lesnar.
Sure.
People go, oh, he should turn babyface. No, Brock Lesnar doesn't turn anything. If somebody's over enough to get cheered working with Brock Lesnar, so be it. But otherwise, really, how do you boo a guy like that, Joe?
Yeah. No, I hear you. And if you do boo him, then why the hell not? Yeah, I agree with you. He doesn't need to be a gimmicky guy. I think he's gimmicked out enough and maybe even further than he needs to be because he is. He's just Brock Lesnar.
And so my other big thing is, how are you going to send Roman Reigns into WrestleMania with Brock Lesnar, Brock being the heel, and you're trying to get the people, Brock being Brock, and you're trying to get the people to cheer Roman? Come on, it's not going to happen. Never going to happen.
Now, I'm friends with John Piamarimi, and I don't know if you've met him, but he's involved with talent relations writing over the WWE. He told me, he said, you know what? He said, X-Pac actually is responsible for Roman in many ways. He says that when Roman Reigns was at developmental, that you're the one that told Triple H about him.
Yeah, and I stand by everything I said. It's just like I said, you can pick out a nice piece of meat, but, you can't account for what the cook does with it.
Well, I think you're on to something. I think Roman's got the total package for me. Is it too young? Is the timing right? Wrestling, it changes so doggone fast. It'll change from a Sunday to a Monday Raw. It'll change from the pay-per-view to the live taping. I still think that Roman's over. I don't know, man. I'm surprised if they put Bryan in there. I love that. You must like that as a smaller guy. Something that's really interesting is I follow your career, man. One of the things that is most impressive to me is at the time that you broke in. When you broke in, and I think that the smaller guy, the guy that's under 6 feet 2 inches tall, under 250 pounds, he never really had a shot at the time that you broke in. And I think the industry has obviously changed, but that's largely credited to two guys, to you and to Chris Jericho. Eventually that torch was passed to CM Punk, and now it's passed to Daniel Bryan. But when you broke into the business, did you ever think you could become a star, or were you resigned to just being one of the guys and being part of the show?
Well, at first, as a kid, I was always told I was too small, all those things, and I was laughed at and all that. The thing is I just was honored to be able to be in wrestling, because it was still pretty damn hard to get into wrestling in the 80s when I started in 88. And But once I was there, then I kept making goals, you know, short-term goals, attainable goals, and I just kept moving forward. I never went backwards. So, you know, once I finally got the WWF, and I had some great guys to work with, I learned really quick how to work with the big guys and how to make a match, you know. Like I never shot big guys into the ropes or that. Like, I always figured out other ways to get them, you know, moving. You know, because it's not believable for a guy my size to be moving a guy 7 foot tall or 300 pounds or, you know, sure, around the ring like that. But the thing is I made all my big money working with bigger guys. Right. I'm sure that Chris could tell you the same thing.
So let me give a quick vernacular lesson to our viewers. We have a lot of MMA listeners that tune in and listen to this podcast, but sometimes I can lose them when I drop words like kayfabe or shoot or work. So for vernacular, the derogatory term is jobber. The correct term is known as enhancement talent. Now, Pac, when you were brought over to the WWE, you were brought over as enhancement talent, essentially a jobber. You were the first jobber, and I'm saying that respectfully, to ever win a big match, and that was against Razor Ramon. That's a huge guy to have put you over. Whose idea was this on the creative side of things? How did it come about that X-Pac is going to pin Razor Ramon?
I'm going to have to go with Vince McMahon on that, because he's the one that ran it by Scott, and he's the one that called me on the phone and ran the idea by me. And I was actually brought in. I had a tryout. Me being a job guy was just part of the way to introduce me. So, I mean, I was already hired. They had already had the storyline, you know, all laid out before they brought me in and had me get squashed 2 weeks in a row. Once by Curtis Hughes, Big Cat Hughes, and another by the late Matt Bourne.
But that's supposed to have been shocking for you. When you get that call from Vince and he says, man, I'm going to have you're going to beat Scott Hall, future Hall of Fame, and then Scott Hall. You must have gone, come on, who is this, a prank phone call? I mean, at that time, that must have been shocking. Am I wrong?
Yeah, well, first Sergeant Slaughter called me just to have me come to a tryout, and I put him on hold for like 5 minutes because I didn't even realize he was calling on behalf of the WWF. So I was pretty, you know, but once I got that tryout, I knew I was in. I knew if I just got to showcase what I had, I knew I was in. But it's easy to say after the fact, though, right?
Yeah, it is. It is, but it's still really neat, and it's neat. You know, I kind of feel talking to you like you're too close to the trees to see the forest on this. I mean, what you accomplished in wrestling, brother, is unbelievable because you were not the guy that was supposed to do it. You didn't fit into the box, particularly then. Now, for today's fan, they'd look at you and go, well, yeah, why can't he be a star? Well, let's rewind the tape to the 90s. You just can't. You right. Weren't anybody's idea. You weren't Bischoff's idea. You damn sure were not Vince McMahon's idea. Vince is a bodybuilder guy. You know, he likes those big 6'6" plus. Okay, he likes Big Daddy Cool, obviously the Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior type. So, you know, for you to get over and do what you did, breaking into an industry that anybody with sense is going to tell you no to, is really an amazing thing.
I can't, you know, I'm not one of those guys, Jail, that likes to toot my own horn. I figure, like, first of all, I'm actually not much of a talker anyhow, you know. But I'm one of those guys that, like, if somebody else wants to toot my horn for me, that's cool. But, like, other than that, I feel kind of funny doing it. Well, so I appreciate you saying that.
I mean that's just the reality. I mean, you became a big, you'll always be remembered. So you're one of those few guys in wrestling that will never be forgot. You were in the NWO, and you were Degeneration X, which were just two amazing entities. We have got John Jones, the biggest, baddest son of a bitch in MMA, just gave the crotch chops to his last opponent and said, suck it, on pay-per-view. I mean, it's part of pop culture now. We used to walk around. I was in college at the time. I was 19, 20 years old when it was going on. But everybody was you'd see your buddy across the street. That's how you said hello back then. It was crazy in the 90s. Now, okay, you were part of a backstage group of individuals. Shawn Michaels. That's right where I'm going. Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Triple H. You guys were dubbed the Click by Lex Luger. Now, the word is that this group, the Click, had heat with everybody backstage because of your ability to have influence over Vince McMahon. You take it from there.
You know, and that's true. That's true. I mean, you actually just summed it up right there. But the thing is what's wrong with that? If they could have the, anybody with good ideas and that was going out there and delivering every night in the ring could have that same influence if they had the balls.
Sure.
Or if they stuck together with other guys.
Yeah. Well, that's the business.
It's just that guys never really stuck together. And after a little bit, people realized that you weren't going to get in between us. You weren't going to be able to, separate us.
You know, I agree with what you just said, and I think it carries far outside of wrestling. You're talking about understanding diplomacy. You're talking about, handling PR and helping to make decisions in one's own career. You know, it can be any one of our listeners or other wrestlers that are listening or guys from the UFC that are listening. So many people that think, well, if I just sit back and I toe the line, eventually I'll get noticed. Well, and one thing you're assured of, if you just sit back and do anything, you're going to get older. Right. You're settling for mediocrity and you're going to get older and you're going to miss those opportunities. In America, Sean, you're not going to get anything that you don't ask for.
Yeah. And that goes along with just even, speaking up for talent that's in WWE right now, speaking up, like if creative hands you something that like you don't like, some scripted promo or some crap like that, that you don't like, speak up, man. But you have to bring something to the table better. You can't just bitch about something and not have a better idea. Well, you can, but it's not going to do anybody any good.
Yeah, man. We got politicians that do that crap. We got politicians that go on TV and they complain about the way things are, but they don't offer a suggestion.
Yeah, you could get me going on a whole nother rant about politics, but...
Well, we should do that sometime.
It does relate a lot to pro wrestling.
It really does. It really does. You can learn everything you have to know by studying the history of pro wrestling. I actually wrote a chapter for a book based around that, based around the idea, Sean, I'll tell you real quickly, based around the idea, here was my general premise. Commissions, 36 different athletic commissions that are okayed by 36 different states within our unit, okayed by the House, the Senate, and ultimately signed by the governor of those states. 36 different bodies sanctioned professional wrestling. So you've got a licensed referee laying on the mat with an earpiece because he was just hit in the head, but it's still folding chair by another licensed wrestler. But the politicians, senators, congressmen, and 36 different governors thought it was necessary because they thought it was real. And when Vince McMahon took the stand under oath in 1988 and the big reveal was released that, no, this is entertainment and it's predetermined outcomes, slowly but surely these commissions became defunct, but not all of them, including right here in my home state of Oregon. We still have a professional wrestling commission that takes a tax and regulates these events, which is mind-numbing. These politicians are the same guys.
It's pretty draconian out there, too, right? I mean, it's like it's crazy. Like from what I hear, I mean, from what I hear, you can't even run out there because of it.
Yeah, basically, that's about it. And these same knuckleheads, these same governors and former state senators and state congressmen are now in Washington, D.C., and they're now looking over our health care, our Social Security, making decisions about war. These same knuckleheads that thought wrestling was real and sanctioned laws to regulate it. They quietly and embarrassingly went away, but they still passed these laws, and they're still passing other ridiculous laws because they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I have a hard time believing they actually thought it was still real. I think they just thought that money was still real, though.
Yeah, I hear you there.
Because they get like 8%. I know in some of the states, because it always behooved me to understand where all the money was going and how it was being split up. And they would come in and just take like 8% right off the top. Take your blood pressure, even if it was like a crazy reading, they'd just write it down and say next.
and they'd be gone. Like, the doctors would be gone before the matches even started.
Sure.
Somebody really get hurt, and they'd have to call somebody, you know.
Well, that's another thing. Commissions will do that. They will justify their existence. When they have an important... they'll come in and take a guy's blood pressure.
They're like a kangaroo court. You know, they can just make up whatever arbitrary, you know... I'm sorry, man. Don't get me started.
No, man. I mean, you're right on them. I never would have pegged you as a guy that followed politics. I actually wish I would have known that. But we've got to come back on. We've got an election coming up in 2016. Oh, yeah. I think this will be appropriateness. All right, let me steer us back. Let me steer us back to wrestling. Now, I want to talk some Scott Hall. Look, Scott Hall is one of the greatest characters, and he was suited for the WWF and the WCW. However, he never held a world championship belt. In your opinion, what kept him back?
Honestly, probably the only thing I can think of is maybe just thinking he was unstable, because a lot of us were pretty messed up back then.
Yeah, I'd say there was some of that, and he got pretty far.
Otherwise, I don't see what you can't give me another reason.
Yeah, and the timing's a son of a bitch, too. You know, you look back in the 80s, Hulk Hogan held that strap so darn long. If you didn't hold, it didn't mean you were a bad wrestler, but unless you were named the Ultimate Warrior, you just weren't getting it. And he did have a little bit of that. You know, when he was in the WCW, he had his own thing going with the NWO. They weren't, you know, the belt was doing its own thing. The NWO was enough. When he was in the WWE, you got the Rock, and you got Austin, and you just he had his own buddy Kevin Nash. So I think maybe there were some problems there. Am I right?
No, I see what you're saying. And in the 80s, Vince called him in the early 80s or in the mid 80s when he first started. And at the time, Scott was worried that he wasn't ready, so he didn't go.
Right.
So he missed out on that too. So. You know, well, I mean, you know, everything happens how it's supposed to happen, in my opinion.
All right, now speaking of things happening, you know, you were able to foresee some stuff. I mean, let's talk about your time in the WCW. You left before the downfall. You must have seen the writing on the wall. But let's settle this. I want to settle this right now on my podcast. What's the real scoop? Who killed WCW? Was it Hogan? Was it Hall? Was it Nash? Was it Bischoff? Was it AOL? Was it Russo, who's the common belief? I don't know that I personally believe that, but tell me what you think.
I think a lot of people deserve a little credit for that. I don't think it was a one-man... you know, there wasn't a one-man wrecking crew that went in there and destroyed that company. I guess the buck lies with Eric, Eric did some incredible things, you know, Bischoff.
Sure.
It's just that to get the talent that he needed, he gave too many, when you give up creative control to your talent, you're screwed.
Sure.
It's amazing how they got anything done around there with that, you know, with those clauses given out to these top talents.
Did they give it to more guys than just Hogan? Everybody knows Hogan has it, but I didn't realize who else got it. Bret Hart, I'm assuming.
Bret, Scott, Kevin.
Wow.
Had Barry Bloom representing as the agent. He was Jesse Ventura's agent first.
I know Barry. He represents Jim Ross. I know Barry.
Yeah, he's a great agent. Although, you know, Vince didn't like him, and, you know, Eric didn't like him, even though Eric wanted him to represent him. But, I mean, he had, so when we would get something in our deal, we would always share it with our friends, you know? So everybody else got the same deal, too. Well, not everybody, but anybody like Bret or Scott or Kevin, you know?
You know,
like that.
And Bret... Bret was a miss from a mile away, man. I was a huge Bret Hart guy. I used to have the sunglasses. I go to the shows when he was headlining back in the 80s. But by the time he went over to WCW, and they're talking like a $3 million contract and creative, and you got the Montreal Screwjob, you got all these different things. Going, man, Bret, there, you know, a blind man can see you are not going to take over that company. There's too many guys way in front of you. And Bret came out, and again, I'm a mark, but I thought he was shooting. He came out one time and claimed, I've had zero title shots, and I've had, you know, and he goes on this poor me rant, and it's like, Bret, You know, Gandhi's the only person to successfully make being pathetic into something. If you want to come out here and be a crybaby, I can tell you, and I'm a fan of you, Bret Hart, I'm going to be the first to go. You need to find a way to navigate within these systems and come out on top, and being pathetic isn't going to do it.
Very well put.
All right.
Very
now,
well put.
Now, here's a controversial question. Everybody knows about Eric Bischoff firing Steve Austin prior to him being stone cold Steve Austin, but he still fired Steve Austin, and he did it FedEx. He didn't even call him. He literally FedExed him. Austin goes to his front door. He opens it up. He's got a pink slip inside. This is well known. This is a big deal, and even Bischoff has said, man, I screwed that up. However, your partner in crime, Triple H, fired CM Punk via FedEx. Why is that not treated the same?
I guess it probably could be.
Look, oh, I'm going to need more than that,
my
friend.
I've not talked to Paul about that. I only know what I saw Punk say and, you know, Vince's response to that. So, it's not very cool. I can say that.
You know,
it happened to me. You know, the thing is Eric let me go the same way by FedEx.
Now, is that literally just a fact? I mean, he doesn't shoot you a quick text message. There's no phone calls. There's no way. Now, in his defense, and I don't know if this is much of one, but when you have a company that big and you got to just move really quickly, as easy as it may sound to a common viewer to pick up a phone and have a conversation, man, you're not getting off the phone in less than 20 minutes. There's only so many hours in a day. It can be hard. Now, it's rude. It for sure qualifies as rude, but I'm not positive there's a better way to do it.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
Some people say, oh, it was chicken shit or this or that. No, if he was going to do it, that was how you do it. You had Nick Lambros, their legal, you know, their attorney, fire me off a letter of termination. Although, to me, it was my get-out-of-jail pass.
Sure.
Because, you know, Sean was leaving after he did the favor for Austin, and I was going right into DX. Can't get much better than that.
You know, speaking of DX, you were in NWO, you were in DX. You can only choose one, man. They're both on top of a burning building, both of these entities, and you can only save one. Which one was more valuable to you, NWO or DX? And I don't mean financially. Which one of these was cooler, NWO or DX?
Wow, man. See, no matter what I say, I'm kind of screwed on that. Because, I mean, none of it would have happened if it wasn't for NWO.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing. You know, see, because I had to leave. Vince looked at me still as 1-2-3 kid. A guy that he was going to keep, you know, in the middle of the card or even under, depending on how he felt, you know. But so I had to leave and go prove myself somewhere else and then come back. So that was huge for me to go down to WCW and achieve success.
I see.
But still, to me, DX is my favorite.
DX is the coolest, man, and it ended well. The NWO didn't end well. The company went out of business, so there's a bit of a black eye there. But I remember when it started, man, when you guys came out, and you know, you specifically, you got the headband. You were the one that came out with so damn much energy. I mean, you were an ultimate warrior type in your own regard, in that you must have been somewhat fatigued by the time you hit the ring.
It's funny you say that, because I would make sure, even if I was the champion, I would make sure that my entrance was first, just so I had time to catch a breather while the other guy was making his entrance.
Yeah, I believe that. But it was cool. I mean, I loved it when you came out. All right, Sean, stick around. We got to pay some quick bills around here. I want to talk more with you. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Hey, here's a funny thought. You ever wonder why razors are so expensive? Maybe it's because razors are loaded up with so much shave technology. Vibrating handle, 19 blades, a laser pointer, a compass, a thermometer. They even come with a back scratcher. Listen, I don't need any of that crap, and neither do you. And it's not fair to make us pay for it. I was sick of paying out the nose to get a great shave. That's why I made the switch to DollarShaveClub.com. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors and grooming supplies for a couple of bucks. It's simple and it's smart. It takes 2 minutes to get going. and then you never have to worry about razors again. DollarShaveClub.com gives you a free handle, and then they send you replacement blades for just a few bucks. You can get blades delivered every month or every other month. Your blades arrive like clockwork. Stop squeezing weeks of shaves out of a dull razor and start treating yourself to a fresh blade shave anytime you want. Believe me when I tell you, DollarShaveClub.com blades are fantastic. I've never had a closer shave. Upgrade to the smarter way to shave. Get your shave gear where I get mine. Go to DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. Save time, save money. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. I promote a few products on this show. I use Dollar Shave Club. This is a fantastic product. The very first time they sent it to me to my house to use, I called my father-in-law, Steve. I said, you've got to try this. He went online. He signed up. That's a true story. And for that, you're welcome.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Brace yourself. DraftKings.com is delivering a haymaker to the world of fantasy sports. Introducing Daily Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com. DraftKings is America's favorite daily fantasy sports fight. Better start over. Third time's a charm. Ready for me? Brace yourself. DraftKings.com is delivering a haymaker to the world of fantasy sports. Introducing Daily Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com. DraftKings is America's favorite daily fantasy sports site where you could win enormous cash prizes every time you play. It's easy. Just pick five fighters. Stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to a serious payday. Score points for significant strikes, advances, takedowns, reversals, and sweeps, and knockdowns. This has a major feel of fantasy football, but now only DraftKings is going to bring this to the world of MMA. Gain bonus points based on which round your fighters end their bouts. These are the biggest daily fantasy contests for mixed martial arts ever, and they're only at DraftKings.com. Don't miss out. DraftKings.com awarded over $300 million last year. How much of that did you win? Make sure you can win some of that when I ask you again next year at this time. Listen, hurry over to DraftKings.com. Use the promotional code CHAEL, and you can play Daily Fantasy MMA for free. You could win your slice of $1 billion being awarded this year. Just enter CHAEL, C-H-A-E-L, and play right now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com, DraftKings.com.
Now, back to your welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's CHAEL Sonnen.
All right, we are back. To your welcome. I've still got Sean Waltman, better known to me as X-Pox, and to some of you true, true fans, the 123 Kid. Sean, what's happening, man? You still there?
I'm here.
All right, listen, when the WCW was purchased, and they essentially closed up shop and rolled some guys over to the WWE, one of the guys that really confused me why he was not brought over and given a push is Buff Bagwell. Now, he was brought over. He had one bad match, and they essentially pulled him off TV, and then his career just unfolded from there. But at that time, not only was Buff the stuff, not only was he pretty cool in getting over, but he's also a young guy. You know, when you're in wrestling, you're only 28 years old, and you've got a fan base. That's a guy that you keep on the roster. What's the backstory there? Why did Buff not make it?
To be honest with you, The roster that was already there was looking for any little thing for anybody that was coming in from the other side, so to speak, looking for anything to pick them apart about. You know, it was just like everybody from WCW was getting hated on, except for just a few. And I guess he was, some of it was his own fault, and some of it was, you know, he was a victim to that.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Like, I mean, I know while he was in the ring, you know, he came back and his top hat was punched through the middle, you know. I mean, so there was people there that, you know, I guess he had maybe some heat with.
Wait a minute. Wait a second. That's backstage? He does a match, he walks back, and somebody vandalized his top hat?
Yeah.
That's a scumbag move.
He sits about in the ring and then comes back and there's a hole in the top hat.
You know, that's a problem because I would imagine you can't just go get those top hats anywhere. He probably only had one or two of them. So if somebody vandalizes it, I mean, that's like killing Damien for Jake the Snake's gimmick. You can't just go get yourself another snake.
Right.
I mean, there's worse things you could do to a hat than punch a hole in it. If it were me, I would have worn it out the next night with the hole in it and just let people speculate why. But, yeah, that's rude right there. That's going to start a fight.
It was either that or, like, you know, or somebody could have defecated in it, you know, something like that.
Well, and that was kind of what I meant by the other thing you could do, yeah. Now, when you talk about, now, okay, Buff Bagwell, let's stay on him. And see, I like to go to YouTube. I like to check out the shoot interviews. I think that Jim Cornette is just a blast on those. But there's a number of guys that I watch. The problem we've got, Sean, is that the shoot has become the new work. And so I never know what's real, you know, and that's actually part of the enjoyment. But I do enjoy when that fourth curtain is revealed. Buff Bagwell is saying about himself, Buck Bagwell is claiming that he's a hooker. He's claiming he's a gigolo, to quote his words. Is he working everybody or is this guy working as a male prostitute?
He very well may be.
Yeah, I could see it,
you know,
too,
I mean,
actually.
I got to give him credit, for coming out and, you know, just being real about it.
You got to advertise. Yeah. Look, if you're in that industry, you have to advertise.
And, you know, he comes from the male stripper background before he was in wrestling. So, I mean, you know, I mean, it makes sense.
Is there a market for that for women? Is there a
market?
Can you get business?
I didn't know women had a problem getting laid.
I couldn't pay a girl I couldn't get paid by any female for me to take her on a date. That's not going to happen.
Really?
I couldn't imagine.
I have a problem paying for sex. Like, to me, if I got to pay for it, it's kind of the turnoff's gone. You know,
it's a little bit strange, man. It's a little bit strange, particularly if the guy's advertising it. You know, now the next gal knows, oh, this is what he, okay, you know what? I'm not even comfortable talking about this. There it is. You kids that are listening to this, you go out to YouTube, you search it out yourself. If Buff is listening, he's welcome to call in any time. But, you know,
the thing is Mark is a good talent, and, you know, and I started, like, we got our break together in Dallas at the Sportatorium in GWS. And so, I mean, I knew he was good.
Yeah.
It didn't work out for him.
He was good.
As, you know, WWE.
He was very charismatic. He gave a good interview. He knew how to be hated in a lovable way, which is rare. You know, that's almost a quality that the Rock-esque, if you will. There's not very many guys that can be hated and loved at the same time. I was disappointed with the way it shook out for him, and I think in hindsight it was a bad move.
I do, too. They could have done something with him.
Now, here's another guy. The WWE is now a public company, so all the rules have changed. You know, Vince is in charge, and we get all of those things, but he is now beholden to stockholders. The FEC is going to look at things a little bit differently than how the WWE would. But this one surprises me, and I've made this argument with John Pierimi before, and he disagreed with me. He laughed at me and thinks I'm crazy. But when the WWE did a round of cuts, they cut eight guys, and Brodus Clay had his head on the chopping block. That surprised me because he was over. He couldn't wrestle worth a damn. He was too big to, but he could dance, and it was entertaining. And when a fat guy can dance, it's funny, and I like it, and now it's gone.
Yeah. I was surprised about that too, because he was pretty in politically around there too. So that come as a double shock to me.
Yeah, they don't seem to be bringing him back. You know, if Dana White cuts a guy, and there's a process, you know, it's tough to get in the UFC, and he likes to give as much opportunity as he can. But if he cuts a guy, he'll kind of cut him with a roadmap back. You know, Dana's not afraid to call you and say, listen, I need 3 wins from you on the independent circuit, and you're back in. Or, hey, I need 4 wins. Or, hey, man, go get 2 finishes in a row. Send me a text, and you're back. With a guy like Brodus Clay, or even a guy like Buff Bagwell, when you're a young enough guy with a big enough fan base and they release you, is this a cutthroat thing? Hey, beat it, you're out. Or is this, you know, you bring a guy in and go, man, I hate to tell you, but there's just not enough room. Here's what I need you to do. You know, go over and wrestle in Japan for a little bit. Let's kick the can down the road 10 months and call me. Is that how it is in wrestling? Or what's it like when a guy does get released?
I've heard the stories vary. I mean, I've heard a few people say that, you know, hey, somebody has said, hey, do you want me to call Japan and put an order for you over there? Or I've heard Laurinaitis do that for a few guys. Regardless of what, you know, of John Laurinaitis' reputation, I've heard he's done that for certain guys. But, you know, mostly, honestly, Chael, it's just a letter saying we wish you best of luck in your future endeavors.
All right, so it's a business move. It's just business.
Yeah.
All right.
And see,
I get that. I understand. I mean, well, you know, welcome to the working force, but we don't deal with that. You know, the UFC, that there will be a personal touch, whether it comes from our president, Dana White, or it comes from our vice president, Joe Silva. You're going to get more than just fire. You're at the very minimum, you're going to get a personal email, and it's going to be short, and it's going to say, you know, this is the ugly part, but we have to do this each week, and your number's up. So it's a little bit, and that's even hard.
It sounds like they're a lot like Vince McMahon, though, and that it's really hard to burn a bridge with them if you can make them money.
There's some truth to that. I mean, it is a business, and a lot of people take power in discovering that fact. You know, I'll hear reporters come out and say that, well, this guy only got this opportunity because he sells tickets. And I'm kind of going, yeah, he got the opportunity. Yeah, this isn't rocket science. They just did this in NCAA football. They put Ohio State in as this, like, wild card, if you will, into the fourth spot. It's, you know, and you've got TCU and these other knuckleheads coming out claiming they should have the spot. It's like, guys, this is real simple. We're not going to go look at scores and who ran the most touchdowns. The only two numbers that matter are who sold the most tickets and what were your TV ratings. There is no other there is no other number that is relevant here. And I love when people just now come to the revelation that it's about sales and they act as though they've uncovered something. I kind of just put my head in my hands and shake my head. It's like, yeah, man, wow, you're a genius. Yeah, you sure did. You sure did.
It's amazing people are just now figuring this out.
Right. And they really, but they say it with empowerment, Pac. They say it like, you know, they're kind of looking left and looking right, and they kind of lower their voice a little bit, like they found out, you know, they found out the code that nobody was meant to see. And it's like, God, this is the way everything is ran. It's so ridiculous. And you can play all the gamesmanship. I'll go back to Ohio State. You can play all the gamesmanship you want with who you're going to put in that spot. You're putting Ohio State in because they sell tickets.
Exactly.
That's the end of it. All right. Speaking of spots, if there's a guy in the back, there's a guy in the locker room that you can just count on to blow a spot, you just know he's going to miss his mark. Who's the guy that blows more spots than anybody?
Wow, that's a tough one. Man, honestly, Jill, I tend to blow at least, I don't know if you want to call it a spot, but I tend to at least blow one thing or screw something up in every match.
Oh, okay, so you're the guy. Know. The egg is on your face on this one. No, man, I don't think so, buddy. I think what you're doing right, I think you're walking the fence. I think you're doing
I
it pretty
am,
well. I know you are.
I know, like, I don't know about blowing spots, but Kurt Hennig, the late Mr. Perfect.
Of course.
May he rest in peace, one of my dear friends. He used to get lost a lot in the ring. For one of the greats, he used to always be like, where am I? Where am I? Where are we? But just still one of the greatest ever and one of my dearest friends. But I'm still walking that fence. I don't know, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kurt's also dear to me. I never had the pleasure of meeting him. I was a little bit younger when he was coming through, but I am from the Pacific Northwest, and he started out here in Portland Wrestling and came through our circuit, our regional program. We had a promoter named Don Owen, also rest his soul. So, you know, I always kind of felt close to him. You brought up Matt Bourne, the late Matt Bourne. He also came through this, lived about two towns away from me over in Milwaukee. You know, so I felt that. But, you know, these guys had their demons, man. They dealt with substance issues. Did these guys that you'll hear about, that it's well documented, not attempting to embarrass or out anybody, well documented, but when those guys had that, Pac, did they bring that into the ring? Every now and then, would a wrestler show up, like with these horror stories that we see in the indie circuit, you know, well, whether it is Hall, sometimes it is Scott Hall, Jake Roberts, really well known because of that documentary. Will guys show up in big time wrestling, WCW, WWE, will they show up under the influence?
Sure. I mean, you don't really see it in WWE, but I mean, recently, like a few years back in TNA, they sent one of my dear friends to the ring in a match with Sting, and you know, he was basically at overdose level.
Wow.
Yeah, and they had to like scrap the match like mid, you know, halfway through the match. So I mean, it happens, but. You know, I mean, you don't really see it that much anymore. It's just, but I mean, I know on occasion I've gone in the ring under the influence, and I'm not talking about pot. Like, a couple of times I went in the ring drunk and, you know, filled up, and there's no excuse for it. There's a lot of reasons, but I don't really count them as excuses.
You know, how does that happen? Here's something that we have in common in terms of our two industries, UFC, WWE. You know, that's a different animal, but not by much. And something that we really have in common is we both give our bodies for the applause of a crowd who's basically strangers to us. And we both live our life on the road trying to fill ways to occupy our time, whether it's going to a movie alone or sitting down in a restaurant and eating by yourself with the company of your cell phone and your social media account, or, you know, and it's we hear about it a lot in pro wrestling, that it leads to guys in different time zones. They can't go to sleep on time, so you got to take something for that. You can't wake up on time, so you got to take something for that. Is that what leads to the pain pills and the substances mainly in pro wrestling? Is that what it is? Is just the nature of the beast, or why is it that we keep hearing about this?
Well, I mean, it can be part of it, but I also know some guys that have gone, you know, through their career and not had to rely on stuff like that. Triple H being one of those guys, you know, but that doesn't mean everybody's the same. I mean, not everybody has perfect genetics and came up in a perfect household with both of their parents still married and, you know, all of these things, and weren't molested as a kid or, you know, things like that, or abused and you know, in other, however which way. So, I mean, the thing is so many of us, look, the pro wrestling gets blamed, okay, you get in a wrestling and it turns into a drug addict. Most of us bring this baggage into the business with us when we come into it. You know, so I think that's a big part of it.
I appreciate you saying that.
Bring this baggage with us.
I appreciate you saying that, because that's honesty right there. You know, a guy will break into pro wrestling sometimes at 16 years old. You particularly hear about those guys out in Canada. You know, with the Lance Storm age, all of the Hart boys starting in Stu's Dungeon, the Chris Jerichos. They started as kids. They had a lot of them had their first match before they're 18, which I think is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, however, I was 15 when I started.
Yeah, man, they're set in their ways by the time they're signed. By the time they're TV ready, they're already living their lives. And you're right, they bring that into the business, not the other
way. So, I mean, that's a huge part of it, that most people that don't know a lot about it, they just assume, oh, it's wrestling did it.
Right.
You know? And I don't know, man. I think that's BS.
Now, I love hearing about the backstage ribs, and you were talking about Buff Bagwell and somebody punching out the top of his top hat earlier. What is the craziest backstage rib that you've ever seen?
Well, man, the thing is, I'm probably responsible for the craziest.
Well, good. Then it's not hearsay. We've got it right from the horse's mouth, man. Do tell.
Well, I'm not going to bring one of them up, but I would see. I'm not really that proud of it anymore, but people still get a chuckle out of it. I was like the guy known for putting the turd in somebody's bag or something like that, you know. So.
Do we got any specifics on this? Do we have a reason? Were you doing it to be funny, or was it out of malice? I think whoever did that to Buff must have been mad.
Early on, it was, to be honest about it, like, when I was younger, when I was a kid, 1, 2, 3 kid, I was just doing whatever to be accepted, you know? I was kind of a follower. So, you know, I did those things to gain acceptance and be, you know, to be, you know, to be liked. But I had to get Juventud Guerrero one time when we were in Mexico because I had a really bad time in Mexico and I was drinking heavily and got an altercation and ended up trying to commit suicide.
That's not great. I'm sorry, buddy.
What's that?
I said, I'm sorry to hear that. That's not great news.
Yeah, well, it sucks, but, like, the thing is I'm doing great now. That's the main thing. But Juventud thought it was okay for him to go on a radio interview and tell everybody all my business.
Oh, wow.
That I entrusted him with. And so a couple of years later, he comes through in Mexico, and while he was in the ring, I dropped a turd in his bag. And then he came back and he got mad and
that's
he ended up
nasty.
His ass up. So.
Oh, that's nasty.
You know,
all
sometimes
right.
It might take a while to get your receipt, and that's like a wrestling term for if somebody does something to you, you want to get a receipt.
I like that.
And the thing is also you asked me about like some of the funny ribs. This one wasn't in the locker room, but on the plane ride back from England one time, Freebird Michael Hayes passed out. He was a really belligerent drunk. Huge Freebird fan. I am. I love Freebirds, and Michael Hayes is phenomenal.
Now, this isn't the plane ride from hell that you're about to reference, is it?
Yeah, this is it.
All right, tell me. Tell me what happened.
Well, something happened between him and JBL. And there's varying stories, but one of them is that JBL. See, I had a match with JBL, and he got cut. He bled, so he had a fresh wound on his head. And Michael Hayes was drunker than shit, and he came up and he knuckled him right in the forehead, and it started bleeding. And so I guess JBL just jacked him one, and he supposedly knocked him out. All I know is he was face down, and his mullet was hanging out. And I had some heat with Michael, and, you know, I disagree with him on some things, and like I said, he was a real belligerent drunk. And so, basically, I asked somebody for a pair of scissors, and, you know, I cut his hair while 150 people or so watched, and the whole plane erupted. It was like Steve Austin came out the curtain. As soon as I chopped his hair off.
So you were the one. I have heard this story numerous times, and I've never been told who actually cut off the ponytail. Now, you call it a mullet, but as I was told the story, his ponytail, you're the one that was holding the scissors. Now we know.
Yeah. The thing is, I mean, it was a pretty popular move, you know, and when Michael got up, he was really understandably upset, and I assumed that, you know, he knew I did it. I plastered his hair up on the wall in the locker room and put a sign up, you know, auction this off for charity. It was just being a smartass, and JR came in and ripped it off the wall. Now I wish I would have kept the hair trail.
That's funny, man. And I love that I've got this piece of the story, Sean, because I've known this story forever. I mean, the plane ride from hell is notorious, but I never knew who was holding the scissors, and now I do. It was you.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, I was told on that same flight, I could be combined in stories. You tell me if this was that same flight, that Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle went to takedown on a plane.
No, Kurt Hennig.
Okay, it was. It was Mr. Perfect. And who did he do it with? With Angle or with Lesnar?
It was with Brock. And what happened was Kurt was really ribbing Brock, you know, messing with him, talk, just razzing him. And Brock wound up, and Brock said something to Jerry Briscoe, "Hey, what should I do?" And I don't know if Jerry wound Brock up. I can't remember exactly how the story goes, but all I know is these guys started in, you know, and start trying to take each other down in the aisle of the plane. And they got near the exit door, and somebody made a big deal out of that, even though it's pretty much impossible to open an exit door when you're 30,000 feet in the air. So,
well, those are small details. I think that if somebody made a big deal about it, they could be warranted. Is this a commercial flight? Oh, it is a charter. Okay.
Like a commercial flight. It was our flight.
Sure. There is a difference. You kind of get to make your own rules when it's a charter flight.
Yeah. Nate was strutting down the aisle with just his robe on, and I mean just his robe on.
Sure. I heard he was into flashing it as well. And the robe wasn't closed, if you will.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I thought it was a fun flight.
I think it's hilarious.
I think so.
No, I would imagine an executive win. I didn't know Briscoe was on that flight. I talked to Briscoe quite regularly. I've never brought this up. I've only read about it. This is actually fascinating. I'd love to know that you were the one holding the scissors. Now, just so I clear this up with our listeners so they don't start tweeting me, who got the takedown? I'm imagining when Brock and Mr. Perfect went at it that Brock came out on top. Am I right?
Sure.
Sure, of course he did.
The thing is though, Kurt was pretty salty, so, I mean, it wasn't just like a walk in the park for him.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. Kurt had a little go in him, huh?
I mean, let's be real about it, though. I mean, not a lot of guys are going to be able to go toe-to-toe with Brock. The only guy that everybody saw do it was Kurt Angle.
Yep. Well, who won when those guys went at it a little bit? I mean, Kurt was far more accomplished.
Yeah, Angle got him.
Yeah, I would think that he would.
I mean, it was really decisive, too.
Well, Kurt was an Olympic champion. You know, you take a big old national champion, that's an impressive accomplishment. But when you're talking about an Olympic champion, you're talking about a whole nother level. We're talking about a good solid guy, main Carter in Ring of Honor, versus the guy that headlines WrestleMania. That's the kind of gap between an Olympic champ versus a guy that had success in the NCAA. Both great accomplishments, but yeah. That wouldn't surprise a guy that wrestled.
The NCAA champ, it's hard to understand, maybe. I don't know. I've never been an NCAA champ in anything, so I'm only guessing that when you reach that level, it's probably hard to imagine somebody being that much better than you.
Yeah, but there is a gap. I mean, Angle was the real thing. That's just the truth. Lesnar had an incredible career, too, but there is a gap. If you're talking NCAA versus Olympic, there's a huge gap, and it sounds like you and some of the boys in the back were able to witness that.
Yeah. Kurt went up to Brock, you know, once he heard that Brock was saying, you know, that he could take Kurt. Kurt took issue with it, and he went up to him and said, "Did you say you could take me?" And I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Sure.
And Brock said, "Yeah, I'm like 70 pounds heavier than you." And he's like, 2 weeks. And a couple weeks later, he's like, "You and me, it's time."
Why did he think he could close that gap in 2 weeks? I just want to know why he thought he could. What did he think he could accomplish in 2 weeks?
Who, Kurt?
Yeah, what did he think that 14 days was going to buy him?
I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to make sure he was in, you know, good enough shape. I bet he went home and got on the mat with a few guys before he tussled with Brock.
Wow. I love it. I love that he even went after him. I think that that's great. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you make of the CM Punk thing? CM Punk's coming to the UFC. What do you make of that? What do you think?
I guess it's hard to make anything of it until he gets in the octagon. I understand that, you know, I understand the reason why UFC did it, and I understand why Punk's doing it. And I also understand why some of the MMA fans, you know, are mixed about it. So, man, all I know is, okay, we get hit really hard in what we do, but it's a lot different when you got punches being thrown at you and that, and trying to keep your, you don't know they're coming.
Sure.
And trying to keep your wits about you and be able to think, man, I mean, I just, well, it's hard for me to imagine.
Yeah, the learning.
I don't want to be a naysayer, but man,
the learning curve is going to be incredible. You know, if he can have some success in there, good for him. But I tell you what, you know, let's reverse roles and I'll insert myself. I don't know how to pro wrestle, but if I was given a shot to be in the show, whether it's a Raw or a Mania or a, whatever it might be, I'm going to take it. And when people come out and say, well, he doesn't deserve it and this is a publicity stunt, I'm going to go, yeah, that's true. I don't deserve it. But, I can't say no. This is a dream of mine.
Exactly.
This would be a blast, and I want to go do it. So, you know, I think that a lot of people will be able to relate on that regard. Now, Punk's been very cool. And one thing that he hasn't done, Punk hasn't made any illusions that, hey, I'm going to come out and be the next champion, and, you know, I can beat, you know, John Jones, or I'm better than George St. Pierre, whatever, you fill in the blank there. He hasn't done anything like that. He's been real next to just saying, look, this is a bucket list idea. I was handed an opportunity. I want to give it a try. He hasn't quite said that, but boy, he's come close. And it's really hard to not relate with that if you're an average guy. I mean, the average guy has goals and dreams, and every now and then we get to try to fulfill them. I think it's relatable, and I hope he sticks with this message. I hope he doesn't attempt to, hype anything. I think that, look, what it is what it is, and I think it's still something neat. Am I right?
I agree with you. And like you said, he hasn't come out and said, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. And, you know, he's a great talker, and, you know, he's great at talking smack in WWE. But, I mean, he's being pretty, I think he's being pretty humble. I mean, I guess you have to be when you're going from that into MMA, though.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. You know, I can remember the first time that I did a fight, my first fight ever, and all back, I fought in the 90s, fought in 1997, but back then, the term MMA wasn't around. It was still called no holds barred. Yeah, we just didn't know what to call it. There was no gym. You could open a Yellow Pages and go to the MMA, you know, go look up MMA. You're not going to find a place to work out. You wrestled over here, or you did a little kickboxing over at this place, and then on Saturday night you'd try to figure it out. And in my mind, I was the best boxer, the best kickboxer. I was the Hoist Gracie on the ground. I was the blah, 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 fill in the blanks. And I convinced myself of this. I believed it all day, every day, and nobody could prove me wrong because I never gave them a chance. I never had a fight with anybody. I never had, there was just nothing there. So I got in the ring in 1997 believing all of these things, mouthpiece in, cup on, gloves taped up. And as soon as they said go, I realized, man, I have no frame of reference for believing all these things about myself that I thought were true. I'm thinking, you know, and I remember being in the fight and trying to hit this guy. I can't even find him. I mean, you know, the range to make a fist, extend it in a forward motion, and touch a target, that is an incredible skill that you must acquire over time. Well, I didn't know that. I'm missing the guy by 12 inches, and I'm literally thinking to myself, now, why did I think I'd be good at this?
Well, I understand why you would think that, because of all the work you put in and all your achievements in wrestling. It's the hardest sport in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in the Olympics, for crying out loud.
Yeah, thanks. You know, you're right. Now, I was Olympic alternate to set that straight, but you're right. It is a hard sport, and back before MMA came around, it was the toughest and all of that. But, you know, when I talk to Punk, a little bit of when I talk to him, I'm having remembrances of my first experience in 1997 where it's like, look, I've told myself I'm the baddest dude around for a long time. I was only 19. I'm going, man, I've told myself this for a long time. Nobody's ever disproved it. Now, the part that I wasn't admitting to myself was I never gave anybody a chance to disprove it. This was just all fantasy and in my head.
Right.
Punk has not sparred yet. He is scheduled to start sparring this month. So it could be today, maybe his first day. And I think that, you know, he's going to learn some things. And I think that he might have one of those shock moments like I had. The good news for him is he gets to have it in practice. He gets to work through those kinks. And what the final result is, I guess you and I are like everybody else. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. I really hope he does well. I really do. But like you said, man, it's one thing rolling on, you know, doing jiu-jitsu and wrestling and all that. And then, but when you add the, you know, striking to that and you're getting hit, man, I just think that takes it to a whole nother level.
Right,
I mean,
play.
I don't even know what that's truly like. I mean, I've had kickboxing matches and, you know, things like that, but nothing like what MMA's turned into.
Hey, man, did you watch the movie The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke's movie?
Yeah.
Is that a pretty fair depiction of the upswing and then also the post-glorious day career of professional wrestlers?
It's an archetype of a certain, you know, of a pretty common story, you know, in wrestling. I mean, there's some things about it that I didn't like. Like, when they're walking down the aisle in the grocery store and one of them's hitting the other over the head with a tinfoil pan, and I mean, to me, that's just stuff we never would do.
Right.
Maybe some backyard guys might do that kind of crap, but we would never do that.
Sure.
Mostly, I think it did a really good job of telling the story of the sad story of the wrestler that's washed up, and you know, I can relate to a lot of that, especially like the relationship with the kids and all that.
Yeah,
and the what it does to the family.
And, you know, to expand on something you just said about them walking up and down the aisle and hitting each other with, man, that's not wrestling to me. And
no.
God bless the EC Dub and all the talent that came from there. But, man, some idiot wrapping barbed wire around a bat and another guy getting hit and cut wide open. Man, I don't get that. I don't understand how they do that. You know, I listened to Jim Cornette one time, and this stuff drives Jim Cornette crazy. Jim Cornette's an old-school guy. He wants it to still look like a fight. He wants to sell a real product, or at least make people believe it's a real product. But he talks about the fact that, you know, not only are guys falling off of ladders and taking these crazy bumps that are knocking years off their life, but if they do it just well enough, Sean, the crowd will chant EC Dub. And Jim Cornette's contention is, why the hell do you want the crowd chanting the name of the company as opposed to chanting X-Pac, X-Pac, X-Pac? He makes a solid point.
Well, it depends on your point of view. If you're the company, I don't think you have a problem with the crowd chanting, you know, the company's name.
For sure.
Because they want their brand to be over more than anything, you know, even more than their top guy. So, but from a performer standpoint, yeah, I want them chanting my name.
Right.
You know, the name of the company.
Yeah, and some of that stuff, it wasn't wrestling anymore. You know, it just was what you did as a technician, as a speed guy that's out there and working hard and building up a sweat and all, that's wrestling. And again, great talent came from there, and I actually appreciate it. I actually did find the entertainment in it, but pretty quickly, and largely I was influenced by Jim Cornette, but I did quickly see, man, it's not. This cheap heat stuff is good every now and then, but to push it further and to wrestle in barbed wire,
yeah.
It's like, man, that's a spectacle. There is something cool about that.
To me, it's shortcuts.
I think
and
so,
not
too.
In a good way. Like,
yeah. It's like, where's the talent in that? You know, I go back to the movie The Wrestler. They had a guy called the Necro Butcher. He's a real wrestler. He wrestles out on the East Coast, and
sure.
God bless him. But he goes and he staples things to his head for 15 and 25 bucks a night. He loves that cheer of the crowd. I support that. But it's like, Butcher, listen, man, where's the skill in that? That's not a skill.
The thing is about him is he actually does have some skill. He doesn't have to do that. He's pandering to that niche fan base where he makes his where he makes his bread and butter, so to speak.
Sure.
So I mean, I know the guy. I've seen him actually have matches where he actually can work, but I'd hate to get pigeonholed into having a gimmick like that. That's for sure.
It's tough, man. And once that toothpaste comes out of the tube, it's very hard to put it back in. You know, once you start doing that to the level that it's now expected of you, I just don't think that's a fun life long term. And I hope he has a wonderful life.
We don't do fear shots to the head anymore. And although, you know, people might miss it, and I kind of miss it, man, my brain doesn't miss it.
Sure.
You know, and so people got, like, desensitized to all that crap for a while. And now they've walked it back to where, you know, okay, you don't even see chair shots to the head anymore.
Right.
And that's for medical reasons, but also, you know, they had to pull it back. They had to pull the reins back. You know, all the daredevil stuff. And, I mean, just, you're going to lose your, you're going to have your half your talent roster on injured reserve if you don't.
Yeah. No, you're right. You absolutely would. And then they encourage these guys, hey, you got to work. You got to work hurt. And the show must go on. And all of that stuff's true. But it comes back to what you and I were talking about, you know, a half hour ago. This is where drug problems then come in. You know, a guy goes to a doctor. A doctor gives him a straight up prescription for a pain medication. It's legal. It's above board. It's all that. But what the guy then tells himself is, instead of taking one, I'm going to take two. And it says right on the label, don't mix with alcohol. Well, let me see what happens if I do wash this down with a beer. And it's just a domino effect.
Well, wrestler's dosage is at least double.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that's how it used to be. I'm not trying to be a wise ass. I'm just like, I mean, wrestlers always thought, we always had this Superman complex, like nothing could hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously after having a couple of dozen friends dead in the last, you know, decade, you know, that's not the case. So.
I hear you there, buddy. Listen, we are out of time, man. Unless you have anything else to add, I just want to thank you and hope you go on your way, man. But if you got anything to add, if there's a building on fire somewhere, anything you want to plug, now's the time.
Just my Twitter at the real Xbox. That's fine. When I do these, I'm not really on them to plug anything. I just enjoy doing them, especially with somebody like you. I appreciate you having me on.
You know, I appreciate that.
I could talk to you forever.
Oh, honestly. Thank you, bud. You know what? Next time we come on, let's talk some politics. That's a pretty wild thing, particularly with the election coming up. You know, let me ask you one political question. Hillary Clinton, will she get the nomination?
Yes. Yes, she will.
Yeah, she will. She will. Will she be elected president?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that'll be a tough one. We're there on that.
If it's the Republican nominee, boy, I don't have a clue. If it was up to me, it would be Rand Paul. That's just me, though.
You know, I'm ready to stand with Rand. Pretty close. I like Ben Carlson as well, but I think I'm ready to stand with Rand. At least, I go pretty damn far with him. He's a likable guy, and he's smart.
We can't agree with everybody on every single thing.
Sure.
I mean, if somebody does, I think there's a problem with that person's, free thinking. So,
sure.
But, yeah, like I said, we could talk tons of politics next time.
All right, buddy. Well, I'll look forward to it. You got my number. If I can ever be of service to you, let me know. Oh, one last question, buddy. Are you going to Mania this year?
I am, man. I'd love to get together with you when we're out there.
Awesome. I will be there. I'm even going to the Hall of Fame banquet. So, yeah, let's stay in touch.
Tremendous. I really appreciate it, Tail.
All right, cool. See you, Pac.
Thank you.
All right, Sean Waltman there. And, you know, I didn't know what to call him. There was one part throughout the interview where I was a little, every time it was time to say his name, I didn't know what to call him. He's X-Pac to me. He was originally the 1-2-3 Kid. Now, that was just a little bit before me. I didn't experience him through that. So he's always X-Pac to me. He was always the man from NWO, from D-Generation X. He's one of the guys that started the crotch chops. But his real name is Sean Waltman, and now that he's out of wrestling, you never want to be disrespectful to a guy. It's kind of like a president. When the guy stops being our president forever, he maintains the title of Mr. President. The same thing goes with our military. You take a general, the guy retires from the military, he's still general. And I didn't want to step out of line and disrespect a guy like Sean Waltman. So I went back and forth a little bit. That was a struggle for me. Now, the only thing that he asked that we mention is that if you want to follow him on Twitter, go ahead. He's just at TheRealXPac. He said that right at the very end of the show. My two cents on that is, that's really him. That's how I got him for this show. I found him on Twitter. I sent him a DM. About 2 weeks goes by. He didn't respond to me. I wrote him back. Little nasty message the next. I say, hey, man, you ducking me? Send me a text message. And I shut him my number, and he got right a hold of me. He goes, no, I wasn't ducking. I'm sorry. I don't really check this thing. So pretty cool. Never would have thought that he was into politics. That surprised me. We'll have to go down that road a little bit more, not only on the individual candidates, but where he stands on some specific issues. He already surprised me by saying that. Can't thank him enough for coming on. Can't thank you guys all enough for listening. I hope your week just got a little bit better. I hope that you were entertained. And for that, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
When you're ready to buy a car, True Car is changing car buying forever. Yes, True Car helps car buyers get rid of the fear that they might overpay. Every day, True Car users receive negotiation-free guaranteed savings, and True Car users save an average of $3,221 off of MSRP. When you're ready to buy a car, just follow these three easy steps. First, download the True Car mobile app or go to TrueCar.com to find out what others paid for the car that you want. Then register to see upfront pricing information and lock in your savings. Third step is simple. Take your guaranteed savings certificate to the True Car certified dealer for a better hassle-free car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. With True Car, you can save time, save money, and never overpay. To see how much you can save on the car you want, simply download the True Car mobile app or visit TrueCar.com today.